It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We meet a new Central Wisconsin leader in our state's law enforcement community and discuss public safety priorities. Matthew Barnes is the new chief of the Wausau Police Department with over two decades in the department. And you can join the conversation along the way. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chief Barnes, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Your first day on the job as police chief for the Wausau Police Department. Of course, been with the department now for many years. What are you feeling on this first day?
Well, I'm 8 minutes into it, so
and counting.
We're starting off on your show. But, you know, I think there's an excitement here. Every time there's change, that comes with concern and opportunity. So I'm pretty fortunate here. I've been here for quite some time, and we're a big family, and I received a significant amount of support from the team here, and so far everything's going really well. I think I probably get a little bit of a honeymoon from everybody. hopefully a couple days.
What makes a good police chief?
Oh, you know, I think the police chief has to have the question I think should be, what's a good chief and what's a great chief? And a good chief is someone that understands the operations, understands how investigations work, understands what the expectations and needs of the community are. What do the citizens of Wausau want from their police department? How do they want to be policed? And then leads the organization with those types of values and mission. A great chief is one who gets to know their staff, understands what their needs are, and loves them like you do a family. At least with our organization and most of the police departments I'm aware of, you get hired on here, and whether you like it or not, you become part of a family. And it's the responsibility of a chief to love their organization, love their community, and love their staff. And sometimes that means holding them accountable. Sometimes that means figuring out what makes them tick and what it takes to get them to thrive in their profession. And so, like, you can be a good chief, a great chief. I think that comes from not necessarily what you know, but what you feel and how you treat people.
You've served in several other capacities within the Wausau Police Department, including being a detective, a patrol captain. What have you learned from working these different jobs in the department?
Oh, wow. That's took 23 years to get to that point. Well, first off, I'd say every single position here is key. I think a way to look at it would be like, I'm a Wausau police officer currently assigned as the chief of police. And in each of those positions, when you're dealing with someone in the community, so, you know, I'll just give you two polar or different examples. We might have an officer called to a speeding complaint on a residential street. And at that moment, the person that's calling us, that is incredibly important to them. And we also might get called to a homicide scene and be dealing with family members of the victim of a homicide. And it's incredibly important to them at that point. So at all different levels, we deal with people who might be having one of the worst days of their life, or there's something that's really impacting their quality of life in our community. And we have to take all of those things very seriously, because our mission here is to partner with the community to enhance the quality of life. So everything we do has to be through that lens, trying to accomplish that mission. To be able to do that, you have to have a lot of skills and a lot of experience and train and also have the character necessary to be able to do that.
We're talking with Wausau Police Department's new chief. Day one, Matthew Barnes is here as we look at the issues facing this Central Wisconsin community. And you can join in with your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. You've said Wausau faces issues with drug use and overdoses. You've also said that you've learned that it is impossible to arrest your way out of a drug problem in a community, Wausau reporting 36 drug-related overdoses last year. That's according to the Wausau Pilot and Review. What is your department doing to address drug use in the community?
Yeah, that's also a super complicated issue. It's an issue being faced by communities all across the United States. So, you know, when I started here in 2000, we had drugs in the Wausau area, but we didn't have very many overdose deaths. The overdose deaths have really skyrocketed as a result of methamphetamine use and primarily narcotic addiction and the use of heroin and fentanyl here. So, you know, there's a bunch of different lanes to look at that through. We have officers whose sole focus is drug investigation. We have staff that investigate all of those overdoses, whether they be fatal or non-fatal overdoses. And we do an excellent job of that. We could arrest people for drugs every day, and continue to invest in. If I doubled the amount of officers investigating drug cases, we'd arrest twice as many people. I think that's just a fact here. But no matter how hard we work at arresting people for violating the laws of this state or this country, it certainly doesn't seem to reduce a demand here. It doesn't seem to reduce the amount of overdoses we're seeing. And so law enforcement leaders in this area, at least in the greater Marathon County area, as we get together and talk about that, we all agree that just arresting and putting money into investigations is not enough. If we don't make sure we have the resources necessary for prevention and significant resources and availability of resources for rehabilitation and AODA, inpatient rehab, outpatient rehab, and those type of resources available to our community, we're never going to move the ball forward. And so as we look at solutions, we're not a rehab facility, we're a police department. So we investigate crimes, but that doesn't mean we don't have the opportunity to have creative programs in place for diversion, to be able to get individuals who have an addiction, get them to resources, help coach them to show them there is a better way and there's opportunity. So we have officers that we've sent to be AODA coaches. We partner with our North Central Healthcare, which is our facility in this area where we can take people. But that's going to be a change in law enforcement. We are going to have to be aware of all the resources and help facilitate getting people there. And sometimes the way, I'll just share with you my thoughts, which is, I really don't care if we send someone to prison for drugs. What I really want is that individual to not be involved in that lifestyle and be a productive member of our community. So to accomplish that for individuals might be many different ways. And I think we just have to be open to that and try and get those people who are in a really rough place in life back being contributing members of our community.
AODA, meaning alcohol and other drug use. The Wausau City Council has approved the purchase of two vending machines that dispense free nasal Narcan and fentanyl testing strips. How can these machines reduce overdose deaths?
Sure. Well, I mean, first off, that program is a partnership between the Wausau Police Department and the Marathon County Health Department. There were funds available to have a Narcan vending machine. And in essence, what for your listeners, if somebody is overdosing on a narcotic like Vicodin, heroin, fentanyl, frequently they're unconscious and their breathing is very agonal. They are very close to death. And the administration of Narcan nasally, which is a very popular one, that's where we're putting in this vending machine, brings them back to life. And it blocks the overdose and brings them back. And, you know, just a week ago, we had an individual in our downtown who overdosed on the sidewalk, and another individual had Narcan available to them, and it was administered to them at that point. And by the time officers and paramedics arrived, the individual was not out of the woods, but they were then breathing effectively and and at least conscious. So at the end of the day, what that availability of Narcan does is it makes it available 24 hours a day to those members of our community who are involved in narcotic use, and it gives the opportunity to save their lives. And you know, I've heard every which way. People say that's a good thing, that's a bad thing. I think there's debate that occurs on a regular basis, but at the end of the day, every one of those individuals overdosing is someone's child, someone's brother, someone's parent. And, you know, we represent everyone, and the ability to be supportive and be the receiver of that grant and facilitate having these vending machines, I'm very confident that it's going to save some lives in our community. And hopefully we can save those lives long enough to do the other work necessary to get them resources to get them well again.
Matthew Barnes, new chief of the Wausau Police Department, as we discuss public safety in central Wisconsin. Call in with the question, share your concerns, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We meet a new police chief in Wisconsin's law enforcement ranks. It's Matthew Barnes's first day on the job, first hour on the job, leading the Wausau Police Department after 23 years with the Wausau PD. As we discuss aspects of policing, you can call in along the way, field your questions, share concerns, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Last year, the city hired an outreach specialist to work with people who are experiencing homelessness. What effect has this had on interactions between Wausau's police department and people in this situation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been proven to be a good addition to our community. We had the opportunity to, the unhoused population is exploding all over the state of Wisconsin and all over the country. And we were really struggling as a community to address that. And so over several years, we allocated resources that their purpose was to get that population of individuals access to resources, and spent their time doing outreach out in the community. And that's a very difficult thing for police officers to do that also have to enforce the laws and ordinances and the behaviors that are often associated with many of that population here. So the concept came up to let's hire someone who's part social worker, part outreach individual, part expert on the resources here, and someone that can partner with all the different private housing entities in our community to find ways to rehabilitate and get people back on their feet and get them housed. And it's been very successful for the most part. I think one of the challenges we have is, I mean, we've housed lots and lots of individuals that were sleeping outdoors, and now they're in apartments, they have a roof over their head, and they're on a path to stay housed. But it certainly seems for every person we house, it's like a boat that has a hole in the bottom, and you're bailing, but we still have a hole in the bottom. So the population of unhoused is certainly growing in our community. But at the same time, we're doing everything in our power to get individuals to resources and encourage them to take advantage of them. So we're doing everything we can. I think that's all we ask of our staff here is, do the best you can with what's available to you, and don't give up. So that's what we're doing. It's been great. I think it makes us separates us from many communities and police departments, and our desire to really assist those individuals. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I also want to check in on your work around the community-oriented policing house in the Hawthorne Hills area. The department has said the house is meant to respond to crimes faster, make the community safer. What effect has this house had on on area residents' trust in police, on relationships?
Well, the house doesn't exist yet. We're still in the process of applying for a grant and checking feasibility on what it would take to do that. The goal of that house is to have a place that officers can spend time, they can connect closer to individuals in that community, they can lead. But also when at 2 o'clock in the morning, when officers are working with social workers and there's an unsafe environment for kids and we're removing children from the home, and we're trying to figure out placement for them, we'd much rather take them to a house with a bedroom and beds and put them to bed as opposed to bringing them to a conference room at the police department. So we see it's much easier to connect with an unhoused individual, to sit down with them and try and figure out their individual story and what it's going to take to help them. The last place they want to go is the police department. So having another venue to be able to do that, we see tremendous opportunity with that. But a whole different story for you guys is it's very difficult to build anything today, and the cost of construction is difficult. So we're working our way through those challenges.
Is that what's holding back this project? You know, what will it take to get it open?
It's going to take dollars and the support of this community. So we're pretty close to going to our city council and laying out the current situation and working with the grantors to make sure we're all on the same page. I think it's a project that's going to happen, but we might have to tweak some of it because of inflation and the cost of building right now.
Talking about issues facing the Wausau area with the city's new police chief, Matthew Barnes. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Frank in Wausau. Hi, Frank. What's on your mind?
Police Chief Barnes, I'd like to, from your experience, I'd like to hear your perspective on the causes of drug use, drug abuse, the kinds of things that lead to that, and what can the community do to help help correct that?
Frank, thank you.
Well, that's a great question. I'm not sure I have a great answer to it. And I say that because every single time, like during the course of my career, I've had the opportunity to kind of be undercover and really focus on drug investigation. So you deal with a lot of different people who are in really rough places, and each of them have their own story. So it's not like I can tell you everybody's that's really struggling with drug addiction, it's because of trauma, or that it's because they fell in with the wrong group of people, or it started in high school, or it started in their 20s. The same thing is true with our unhoused population that often have untreated mental illness and drug or alcohol addiction issues. When I talk to them, they each have very different stories that require very different solutions to try and help them. But I think that drugs are a very popular thing here right now, and the potency of the drugs that exist in our community, it's become much, much more potent over the last 20 years. Even something that many states have legalized, like marijuana, the marijuana that's available to people today is not the same marijuana of the 60s and 70s. You know, the THC contents are magnified significantly. So the same thing is true with methamphetamine and cocaine. And now with the narcotic use that's occurring, it's all over the map in the potency, which is why we're seeing many of these overdoses, is because, illegal drugs don't come with a label that says, here's how potent this batch of heroin is.
Can you trace where it's coming from? Where is it coming from?
I think that there's the who's importing it into the greater Wausau area, and that comes from larger surrounding cities. Much of the drugs are coming, and we base this on information we get through our federal partners, is coming. Much of the fentanyl is coming from China. We have and imported through South America, but cocaine generally was produced in South America. Much of the heroin is produced in Afghanistan. And as long as there's a demand here, there will be a way to, someone's going to smuggle it and get it here. So it gets here from a lot of different directions and in a lot of different ways. And we are often just chasing all of those things. But at the end of the day, a drug dealer would be out of business here if nobody wanted to buy the drugs. And so we have individuals who are really, really struggling in life because of their drug addiction. We need to have the resources necessary to get them help. And we have to reallocate resources to try and convince people not to do it in the first place so they understand those hazards.
Chief Barnes, thank you for joining us on your first day.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Matthew Barnes, Chief of the Wausau Police Department. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks to a recent listener suggestion, Jim from Winnebago County, who wants us to explore the work of the Northwoods Advocacy Group, Wisconsin's Green Fire.
There are work groups with experts on climate change, wildlife issues like wolves, PFAS, fisheries, water.
Thank you so much, Jim. Your questions or comments are welcome at any point. Call 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Fred Clark is Executive Director of Wisconsin's Green Fire. Fred, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. It's good to be here with you.
Good morning. So your organization's priorities in coming years include climate change, sustainable farming, biodiversity, contaminants like toxic chemicals, PFAS. Which of these priorities requires the most urgent attention?
Oh, so such a great question. And we do as an organization have a broad set of priorities. They're all important. I think two of the issues that we are paying most attention right now are around these contaminants of emerging concern, which is most importantly or most currently PFAS that most of your listeners are probably familiar with. But we're also very much focused on the climate crisis and how in Wisconsin we can both prepare for climate change and its impacts and also do our part to reduce emissions that will ultimately help moderate and reduce the impacts of global climate change.
Take us more deeply into that work on climate change. What role does Wisconsin's Green Fire hope to fulfill in addressing the climate crisis?
Yeah, great question. So we're primarily a conservation organization, and our members include both concerned citizens and conservation professionals across Wisconsin who bring a wide breadth of experience and diverse backgrounds to support our work. A lot of our focus in the climate change issue is around land and land management. Specifically, how do our agricultural lands and our forest lands and the conservation lands in the state, such as wetlands and grasslands and parks, how do those all contribute to a more resilient climate future? But also those lands play an important role and can play an important role in actually offsetting our other emissions from transportation and energy and all the other places that we burn fossil fuels. So the what we call the natural climate solutions is the whole suite of activity.
Oh, Fred, you cut out there. Are you still with us? I think we're having some technical difficulties. Fred Clark is the executive director.
That we can be doing to both protect our lands.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, can you hear me, Kate?
You're cutting in and out. Now it sounds like there was a bit of technical issue there. I can hear you now. Can you carry on there on climate change?
Sure. I'm sorry about that. Our focus with climate change is really the contribution of our natural and working lands, our farms, our forests, our grasslands and prairies and wetlands, how we make sure that those important resources can be resilient to climate impacts, such as floods or fires, but also how they can offset fossil fuel emissions that are contributing to global warming.
What, you know, when you look at Wisconsin lands, where are our vulnerabilities right now? Where are our shortcomings? And then what are we doing well?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, if you look at what experience many Wisconsin communities have had with climate change in the last 15 years, it's been flooding. And the impacts of on roads and infrastructure and public safety and flooding is extreme. And those are huge risks to our flood-prone communities. And especially our lands that are not in conservation cover. It may be lands that are in annual agriculture that are not using no-till or that are not applying good conservation practices. Those are some of the lands that can contribute the most to runoff and flooding, as are our urban environments. When we have too much hard surface, too much pavement, not enough retention, not enough places where water can actually be collected and stored in the landscape, those are vulnerabilities that we can address through better planning and better practices. What are we doing well? I think a lot of communities now are recognizing the importance of natural lands and acquiring wetlands to store floodwaters. I think we're also doing a reasonably good job with much of our forest management, because our forests are really important resources, both for creating that resilient landscape as well as contributing to our economy and storing carbon, which is a really important role in the overall picture of climate change.
We are learning about the priorities of Rhinelander-based environmental advocacy organization Wisconsin's Green Fire. Fred Clark, the organization's executive director. You can join in with your questions and your concerns at 800-642-1234. Fred, your organization is part of the Department of Natural Resources Green Tier Charter for Climate Action that came together, announced this year. And the charter aims to help members collaborate on projects that improve climate resiliency and equity in their own communities. How has this charter affected your organization's work?
Well, the Green Tier Charter, Climate Charter, is one of just several collaborative efforts that we're involved in. To try to advance voluntary practices around climate change. And specifically, the DNR's Green Tier Charter seeks to engage especially businesses and manufacturers and retail businesses who want to make a commitment to reduce their climate footprint. So ultimately, what we want to see there is more and more businesses and industries recognizing the opportunity to move their operations to net zero emissions, to reduce their own emissions by evaluating all of their processes and practices, and in many cases also to, where necessary, to offset those emissions through other activities. It might include carbon offsets, it might include investments in other practices, but ultimately, every business entity in the state has an opportunity to support the interests of our customers by looking at their operations, reducing climate input wherever we can.
I'm trying to understand, is this Green Tier Charter like, you know, related to like a bottom line commitment from the business? Is it a collaboration effort? Is it a working group? Like, what is it?
Yeah, the charter is really an invitation to businesses and communities throughout the state who want to voluntarily agree to evaluate the carbon and climate impacts of their particular operation and take steps to reduce those impacts. The charter is not a mandatory or regulatory program. It's a voluntary program. And as consumers' interest and demand for companies to take these steps to ultimately reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, We think that it's an attractive proposition that we would really hope to see grow as more businesses see that opportunity.
As you look at the relationship with the DNR, there's been controversy in the past about the conduct of the Natural Resources board member, Fred Prain. This led to two of the state's leading conservation organizations calling for a limitation for terms on the Natural Resources Board. What is Wisconsin Green Fire's relationship like with the DNR?
Well, we work closely with Wisconsin DNR staff on a large number of issues, including PFAS contamination, including agricultural conservation, including fish and wildlife issues. So I think the relationship is good, and we respect the professional commitment and the hard work and the talent that so many staff within the Department of Natural Resources bring to public service. We're an independent organization, however, and we'll support the agency when it's appropriate. We'll oppose them or push them when we think more needs to be done. And, you know, ultimately, agencies serve at the pleasure of a governor, and agency chiefs do. So politics are always involved in decisions of any state agency. Mm-hmm. But as an independent organization, our mission is to advance sustainable outcomes to address our greatest conservation challenges.
Let's bring on Barbara in Montello. Barbara, hi, what would you like to ask?
Well, I think that organic farmers capture carbon, which helps with climate change. And I think that we should have a program, some grants or whatever, for people that are growing organically, that would, because they're capturing carbon, it could be based on that, and that they shouldn't have to be paying money, be certified organic. And I think that would encourage more farmers to grow organically, and they'd be able to sell the organic food cheaper.
Barbara, thank you for that. So what do you make of the support systems around furthering certified organic farms in Wisconsin, Fred?
Well, organic farms are an important piece of the overall agricultural picture and bring a lot of benefits. I think something that we recognize, as do farm producers, is that agriculture can be an important piece of the picture in offsetting greenhouse gas emissions. Ultimately, it needs to go beyond organic, however. So if you look at regenerative farming practices, the kind of practices that keep more cover on the land throughout the year, that are increasing soil carbon through things like cover crops and crop rotations that ultimately store more organic matter, those are really important practices that can occur in an organic system or a traditional agricultural system, or I should say a conventional system. But those are all important practices that now we're seeing markets actually for what's called carbon offsets, where organizations are actually willing to pay farmers who can increase their carbon storage in their farm operations. So we're just beginning to see private markets that are going to be driving investments in farm conservation over and above what we've seen previously. And we think that's going to be really important.
Fred Clark is executive director of the conservation group Wisconsin's Green Fire, promoting science-based practices, a long-term vision in environmental protection and natural resources management. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hey, thanks to Jim in Winnebago County for reaching out, suggesting this program with Wisconsin's Green Fire. If you have an idea for a Morning Show program, you can always visit our program page, fill out our web form, visit WPR.org/mornings. Fred Clark is executive director of the advocacy group Wisconsin's Green Fire. It's based in Rhinelander. Join the conversation calling in with your question, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jen in southeast Minnesota. Hi, Jen. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jen.
Good morning. So my, I guess, question slash statement is we have a lot of existing conservation incentives for private landowners, particularly in the ag sector. And there's been a lot of public investments into these. We've seen continued degradation of our groundwater and surface water resources, soil resources. These conservation efforts are voluntary programs. What's going to be done differently for the climate and the well-being? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Jen, thank you. And I think she wants to really stress these are voluntary programs. And how can they move the needle? How can they have more teeth?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. Great question. And this is a longstanding issue that we're understanding better and better, but ultimately the existing programs that we have to support conservation, especially in intense agricultural areas, we're not realizing the goals that we have for those programs. And in fact, we have some profound water quality challenges in this state, including nitrate contamination. That's not everywhere, but is commonly a problem in areas where we have input from either private septic systems and or agriculture that are creating threats and health hazards for residents, especially residents who are drinking from private wells. So this current system's not working. I think it's not working well enough. I think that's a fair assessment. One of the programs that we're actually launching this year is to look closely at the existing agricultural incentive system and see how we can pivot that in order to steer funding to actual improvement in environmental outputs and not just paying for seed to go in the ground or paying for any other practices that might last for a year or two and then not be maintained. So our program is going to be looking at farm sustainability incentives and how we can actually measure environmental improvements, such as reduced phosphorus or reduced sediment or reduced nitrates in agricultural systems and drive incentive payments to improved outcomes specifically for the environment. So that's work that we'll be doing together with Clean Wisconsin and many other partners. Because it's an important issue, and I think your caller is correct. We still have a long way to go to protect the quality of our water, especially in agriculture.
How would you assess so far? What do you make of the DNR's response to date to test and find toxic PFAS chemicals in water supplies across the state?
Well, this is another critical issue, the PFAS contamination, that we're very focused on as an organization. Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is a lead agency on this issue. I think we believe they have done the best that is possible for them to do with their existing resources. But what we're seeing right now is just an explosion almost of understanding and detection of PFAS contamination, especially in municipal water supplies. We are only now beginning to understand the scope of that problem because it was only last year that we finally passed a rule around drinking water standards for PFAS that are now requiring municipalities to test their systems. But based on our own work in assessing the scope of PFAS detections around the state, you know, we've estimated that for the 18 or so municipalities that have exceeded PFAS health recommendations, we're going to see a bill of at least $200 million or more for those communities to effectively address that contamination.
And so state lawmakers approving $125 million in funds over the summer to address PFAS in water. How would you like that money to be used?
Well, most of that money needs to go to communities to allow them to make the investments needed to address those issues, whether it's putting in treatment systems, whether it's changing their well makeup to take contaminated wells offline. But these are major capital investments that many communities, large and small, need to make that they don't have the resources for right now. So the use of those funds is critical. It's important that the legislature appropriated that money. What we need now is legislation that actually allows that money to be spent with the right set of rules. And the Republican-led legislature is going to need to come to terms with the Evers administration in a piece of legislation that will enable use of those funds effectively.
Executive Director of Wisconsin's Green Fire, Fred Clark, with us as we look at environmental priorities for this advocacy organization. And you can join in it with your question, comments, 800-642-1234. In July, Wisconsin's Green Fire released this assessment of the DNR's goal of capping the gray wolf population in Wisconsin. The number used to be at around 350. And you say that number is outdated. Why is that?
Yeah, so the number of 350 as a management goal for wolves was established in the 1999 Wolf Management Plan, which was the last formal plan the DNR approved for wolves in this state. In 1999, we had about 200 wolves on the landscape in Wisconsin. Today, we have somewhere between 1,000 and 1,100. And the 350 number that was in that now 24-year-old plan was, number one, it was not intended to be a cap on the population. It was a number at which a broader set of management practices, including legal hunting, would be employed. But that number was also developed at a time when our understanding of wolves and the carrying capacity for wolves in the state was very different than it is today. Mm-hmm. We've learned a lot in 24 years. The wolf recovery in the state has been remarkable, but it's also stabilized. So what we found in the last 3 to 4 years is that the population of wolves, which grew dramatically over about a 20-year period, is now hovering at somewhere between 900 and 1,100 animals. And we believe that that is becoming a stable population because wolves are highly territorial. They've occupied most of their favorable habitat in the state right now. And we believe that management can maintain numbers in that range while still addressing some of the challenges that we have with livestock and other issues that wolves sometimes cause, especially around human developments.
On the landscape. Fred, thank you for joining us.
It's been great to be with you, Kate. We touched on a number of issues.
Indeed we did. Yes. Fred Clark is Executive Director of Wisconsin's Green Fire. It's a conservation organization based in Rhinelander. And for disclosure, Wisconsin's Green Fire is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.